Welcome to the Chameleons Podcast. Today's guest is Rafael Moati, founder of Delicious Future, a public benefit corporation with the mission to accelerate the shift to regenerative eating. In this interview, we discuss her work and how she combines human perspectives, systemic thinking, and rigorous research with technology to impact individual health and environmental sustainability. However, an important subtext narrative is also about her journey of diverse skill set acquisition and how courage and creativity can open new quests aligned with one's identity and deeper values. This conversation made me rethink my relationship with food and consider the deeper meaning of eating and how to synthesize the threads in my own aspiring entrepreneurship. Before we start, just a quick mention of a new sponsor. Nomono is a Norwegian company dedicated to improving and simplifying podcasting. Their portable sound capsule is easy and intuitive to use. You simply put on their Wi-Fi connected multi-track recorder, use the 4 high-quality wireless mics to record, and it gets automatically uploaded to your very own Nomono Cloud, where the AI-powered audio enhancement provides exceptional audio quality. Check out their website on nomono.co. I highly recommend it. This is the Chameleons Podcast, and I'm your host, Imak Zambrana. And now, the interview with Rafael Moati. Today, our guest is Rafael Moati, founder of Delicious Future, public benefit corporation with a mission to accelerate the shift to regenerative eating by promoting transformations on an individual, systemic, and collective level. And today we will have a conversation about how personal and professional transformation can underlie innovation for the betterment of human condition and health, and how to combine one's interests and knowledge from different areas and integrate this in new modern ways. So welcome, Rafael. I'm really happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
When read about your work in Delicious Future, I was blown away because it's so fantastic how you're working from a very systemic and very multi-level perspective, from within to out.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely. That's been very central to the work. And to be fair, it really came from a very selfish place to begin with. This whole notion of individual transformation and like really deep transformation was really central to, I want to say, almost coming of age, shifting from a more traveled path to my own path. And the way that, and I've always been really interested in the collective and in public good, but the way that I started thinking about so Delicious Future, really what we're about is one, defining a way of eating that promotes human health and the resilience of our communities and restoration of our environment. It's so interesting because I think as you start studying systems design and having more of a bird's eye view on a number of disciplines, you start to see really how much things are interconnected. And for me, in this particular case, I wanted to find a way to, like, my own answer to the climate crisis. I couldn't just say, I'm just going to sit on the sidelines and just continue the kind of work I've done and watch my teenagers be really not only engaged, but also incredibly anxious. Yeah. About the future. And so I started thinking about food, but then as a transformation mechanism. And from a more playful and joyful side, food is always like the way to bring people together, and the way to breaking bread with people is a wonderful mechanism for exchange, for shared experience. And I've always loved like having big dinner parties and making people from different parts of my life meet. And all of these things started sort of percolating and brewing into what's become Delicious Future.
I love that. I was thinking we could start with you so the listener gets to know you and who you are and talk about like your background. And then we could go a little bit through that and then talk more about Delicious Future and all those levels that you're thinking about transformation and also working on. How would you describe you if you were to introduce yourself or write a bio now for me? Who are you?
I generally say that I'm a French woman who has lived in the US for over 20 years. I have twins who are almost 18. And so I'm a mom and I'm a creator. And I've always been at the forefront of different technologies, but always trying to bring that to the service of some cause or some deeper mission. So I started actually my career. So I studied political science in France. And shortly after that, I moved to Brazil because I wanted to live somewhere different and I wanted to learn a new language. And I knew I had some fire inside me, but I didn't really know how to express it. And I felt too constrained in Europe. And so that's where I started working actually in new media as part of a tech incubator. And that's where I started working with people who were developers and artists and creators of all kinds. And that really fascinated me. Like that energy was really something I wanted to have around me. And when I was living in Brazil, I was in my early 20s, I met the person who became my husband, who was living in the US. And so I moved to Miami to live with him. And I'll try and make that long story short. So we got married in Miami, and then shortly after that, we moved to New York City, where he wanted to go back to school and study film. And I was like, I'm still young. I love school. I want to keep studying. And I'd always been fascinated by international law and human rights. And I found this class on human rights where I signed up because I was excited about that. I joined a PhD program in political science, specifically looking at the really awful issue of child soldiers. And
wow.
Yeah, so that was really like intense research and really difficult topic. And at the same time, I'm really grateful that I did that, because today, as I'm trying to make sense of a really complex layer, multi-layered and multidisciplinary challenge, which is like the way people eat today is detrimental to our health and detrimental to the planet. And so that's not exactly it's not exactly the right way to go. We're like literally eating our way to a wall. I think a lot of the training I got in this grad program is helpful today. Mm. And so I'm really grateful for that.
In what ways, like what aspects of the training?
I think a couple of things. One, not being completely overwhelmed by research that can be complex to do. And sometimes in that particular case of child soldiers, I couldn't actually go on site because it was too physically dangerous. So I had to figure out ways to get some information I could trust and rely on and find all the right people that were able to tell those stories or give me that data. So I think it gave me a leg up in terms of finding all the allies. So I think that helpful. I knew I wanted to work with the UN, or as a child, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a psychiatrist so I could go work for Doctors Without Borders. That was really my goal, wasn't so much to be a psychiatrist, but more like helping people in refugee camps. And so I always had this sense of I want to do something international and broader and bigger than myself. So when I was in the PhD program, I was able to publish, but I was also able to do some awareness raising. And so I found this filmmaker who was actually from New York, who had done this really fascinating documentary on child soldiers that she had shown at one university. And so I asked her to come and show it at my university. And I thought, I'm going to do then a panel with experts on this specific field. At the same time, as much as I wasn't really myself an expert yet, I was able to do some outreach to people that really were like at the top of that field. And I think that gave me a lot of sense of confidence about being able to do that and do it again in other ways and other fields. This has been really helpful throughout my career, but certainly now also.
When you're starting up and becoming more and more aware of your field, but not feeling like an expert yet, do you think just having that kind of ability to be okay with that and then active and proactive in the ways that you then figure out, okay, but how can I fill those gaps of knowledge and who can I reach out to acquire and get to the next level?
Yeah, I think it's very formative in that way, for sure. And I think it's like this balance of like boldness of reaching out to people that you like really admire. And at the same time, humbleness about, I clearly am going to be a student of yours for a long time. And that's okay too. And yeah, I think it's not an easy balance, but it's certainly something I'm thriving for. Yeah. Mm.
So you started with the political science stuff and already actually having some educational background from political science and then working a bit with the incubators and being exposed to these different ways of thinking and then into this really serious topic of children's rights and in the critical situations. And then what happened next?
The next episode was my ex-husband had a son who was 10 years old when I first met him. And so he was a teenager and his mom lived in California and he wanted to come live here. And I knew I didn't want to stay in New York to have children, and I knew I was ready to have children. And so we decided as a family to move to California, where my ex-husband had studied and had people. And because he was in tech, it also made sense from that perspective. And I felt like it was going to be exciting and it was a whole new frontier. And I'd never been to San Francisco, but I'd been to LA. And so I told him, I said, how different can it really be? I was on my spring break from school. We came and New York was still really slushy in April and cold. And then we got here and we rented a convertible and got to the Berkeley Hills, where it was like bright sunshine and everything was blooming and it smelled wonderful. And I think it took me a good 5 minutes to be convinced that this was going to be a place for us to live and have kids.
What year was this?
This was in 2004.
So that was an important time in tech.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was an important time in tech for sure. But I was really more interested in like having kids than a big career. And so we had twins. I knew I wanted to be able to take care of my children when they were small. I knew that was something that I was not going to let go of, despite the not very good like support for women here when you have kids. So I decided to just not, I had the opportunity and the luxury to not work for a few years. I was consulting, I was still doing things. I took my first design and interior architecture class when my twins were 6 months old. And everyone was like, you're crazy. You're barely sleeping. You're taking this class. And I was like, I need something to think about. I need my brain to keep going and I need something. And I was really excited to start exploring the creative side of myself because I'd never really done that before. Political science is not exactly a very creative field. Well, I guess it can be in some ways, but certainly not visually. And so it was a really big like shift for me in terms of like confidence as a creator, like confidence of, oh, I can have a vision and might be different from other people's and I have something to say. And I had zero trust in myself as an artist or as even couldn't even call myself a designer at that time. Mm-hmm. But I'd certainly had a sense of that's part of me somewhere and I want to dig deeper, and actually a lot of it for my kids, because I was like, I don't want to be like a single-sided person. I have a lot more to dig into and to offer. And yeah, so that was a special time. So anyway, so I started working in advertising when we came here because the PhD program, I decided not to pursue it. I didn't really want to be teaching in academia. That wasn't really what I was looking to do. And like I said, I'd already published and put up a couple conferences. And to be honest, it was a very difficult topic. And I didn't think I could spend another 6 years like working on it. So I decided that as my kids were little, that I would, even though it was actually before I had kids. So I decided to take a break from the mission-driven work and say, okay, I'm going to work on something where I can establish myself a little bit more financially. And once I'm in a position, I will go back to something that's more mission driven. That was a promise I'd made to myself. And advertising was a good place for me because it was very creative, but at the same time, you have to be very like business minded. And I was lucky to, when my kids were about 3 years old, get a job that was one of the jobs I loved the most. I was working directly with the CEO of an agency, kind of inventing new offerings and working on like pitchwork and just identifying in our clients like what they needed and then creating visions for them to want to buy. Essentially visions that would like bridge together their business needs with our creative capabilities and the technical possibilities of the day. I had a broad creative team, people that did 3D, creating 3D worlds, and people who were doing all sorts of wild digital things. And so for me, it was very fun.
So animation and all of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of storytelling and a lot of animation, but it was also the time... It was around the time that the iPad and the iPhone came out, and they became like a whole new media, right, for marketing and advertising. But what was really interesting is that they also, especially the mobile phones, became like incredible tools for behavior change. And that's when I started learning more about that, and I got really interested in that, more so than a marketing program being like a tool to get people to take their medicine as prescribed. A lot of the work that we were doing was helping people understand better about their own condition or find ways to join communities of people who suffer from similar conditions and things like that. So it was, it started being much more towards the less so about the brand and more so about the conditions and the patients. And so that was really like really exciting to me.
I think it's interesting you made that promise to yourself. Go back to impact work when you entered the advertisement industry. But then when you were there and actually finding these kind of ways to still learn something that you can bring with you into other areas and build on later, like skill sets that you can bring with you, like storytelling skill sets, understanding how digital tools or, and these technologies can be used for other purposes. It could be used for anything, good and bad.
So I have to say, I did not have the foresight of that at the time. No, I had two little kiddos. So I didn't really quite have that kind of a vision about like how I would be able to build on these skills and then they'll be transferable. I just had this thirst of learning more, and I was just really excited. It was such an interesting time. I don't know if you've seen like The Social Dilemma, the documentary about the Center for Humane Technology, where they talk about all the different like game design techniques and like persuasive ways of. So we were using a lot of similar, I guess, techniques. It's been this like long road for the digital world to understand better like the implications and the potential like negative impacts. But at the time, it was still very, the world of everything digital and the web and new media has always been very forward-looking and I'd say almost naive in some ways. In the early days of the internet, everybody was just so excited because it was going to be such a way to democratize knowledge. Like it was okay to have like websites that were just, and in fact, today I'm sitting Internet Archive, which is an incredible organization. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes, I heard about it.
I think it's really cool. What their most famous tool is called the Wayback Machine. So the Internet Archive, their mission is to digitize all of human creation. So they've been taking screenshots of websites for a very long time. So you can go back and see like what a website looked like in 2008. Which is really funny.
What's the main difference, do you think?
First of all, there's like the capabilities and how quickly things load now and all that. But even in terms of like style and things, like you get used to certain style navigation and there's a level of expectations that users have or dexterity, I almost want to say, where to find what. And so like things like that are just really fun. But the point I was making was more that there's always been... And in fact, the same thing was true right now. It's been true in the last couple of years with Web3. And like there's the very idealistic people that are at the very forefront of these technologies. that are the true creators. And then come the people that are more business minded and leverage all that and then make them into businesses. But I've seen those waves many times. And at the time, we were using a lot of the similar like game mechanics, essentially, to get people to use our apps more or engage with different types of content more, which is now, as we know, of course, it's a tool, so it can have like positive or negative impact. But it was really interesting to be part of that. And yes, those kinds of techniques and methodologies are very applicable now to the kind of work I want to do.
Do you mean the idealistic people were naive or the business-minded people? Or so who were the naive people?
Yeah, those who are always at the very forefront are more not naive in the sense of that they're clueless. I mean that they're oftentimes very idealistic about the possibilities of whatever it is that they're developing, like the new ways that it's going to make the world better. There's a lot of that sense of helping with, for example, decentralized ways of governing. Right. Always wanting to change the world with the next, which I think is different for, I'm not saying that the people who are doing business are all evil, and that's not what I mean to say either. But there is certainly like a strong impetus for those at that kind of forefront to use the tools that they either are like discovering or developing for something bigger.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like people who are like really want to make an impact and do something that could be of good, they're often thinking about how does the world work and how do people work and how can I help to make it work in a better way and improve the conditions of life. And then on the other hand, as soon as you figure that out, how you can improve stuff, you can also figure out how to engage for the engagement's sake. If you think about it from a commercial perspective, a commercial perspective is often, how can I get these people to engage in what I have made for them? But from a kind of more humanity perspective, we would rather want to know what engages you and then meet that and work with what's there naturally and what gives you good, kind of the good feelings and all of that, that merging of what's the reality of people not trying to change reality and to create kind of this need and a new reality. It's fascinating when you get that knowledge of understanding how to make an impact positive or what have you, that can always be translated into something that is not necessarily needed, but in my work.
Yeah, for sure. What came up for me when you were describing that is actually a lot of the design thinking and human-centered design principles of really identifying the need behind a new solution or a new offering. And I think that's actually a really central part of work that you do when you do any kind of design, really. But when you're creating anything new, you have to go back to the very core need. And I think what's really been super interesting in the last little while is I also got to learn a bit about nonviolent communication from a really great teacher and practice. And what's so interesting is that at the end of the day, it also comes down to the human need that wants to be expressed, that often is communicated in like a way that is poorly understood, but that deeply there's always, can we identify a need and do we have a need that's shared? And is that how we can create a bridge and an understanding?
That's so interesting. Shared need. Yeah. But I took you off track. So you are now still in California, in San Francisco, and you have been working with these 3D and animation people creating apps and solutions for people within the in health sector, right? Still?
Yeah.
Yes. I remember you mentioned earlier that you always dreamt about working with Doctors Without Borders. Now you're in a way working.
I was working with doctors. Yes.
With doctors. I
got super fortunate. I got to work with a team of researchers at UCSF on a project that was essentially the forefront of precision medicine, like really using data and data analytics to help identify in a more quantified way, like therapeutic paths. And so for like individuals, because the way that drugs come to market is always about like its clinical trials and its averages and its how things like work overall. But then there's all questions about how it's going to work for you specifically. And I got really fascinated by that, those notions of the N of one, how, whether that's true for conditions and health, but also like how that's true for everything else, like your ability to exercise, your way of metabolizing different foods. And so I started being really fascinated by those notions. And so after that, I'll jump to a more recent experience related to that, which is what I got to work at an incubator within Intel, where we were working on a solution actually to help people get into better habits around their exercise, nutrition, and mindset. It was a place that was wonderful because I was able to, in this work, bring together all of the tools that I had gathered in my toolbox between the user-centered design methodologies, entrepreneurship and customer development, and of course, everything around like habit forming and individual behavior change. It was a really wonderful place to explore those notions like even more deeply and very practically. This happens in a lot of big organizations. Project ended up being shelved, even though we had incredibly good, promising results. But at the same time, it made sense from a strategic standpoint that it wouldn't continue necessarily within that organization.
Intel as in the computer?
Yeah, exactly.
So they had the hardware and its software also, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. We were developing a combination that was both hardware and software. And what I was really interested in was the software piece, because the software piece was essentially a behavior change program. But yeah, it's really interesting how in a lot of these big organizations, sometimes you have space and you have resources to do a lot of R&D that might lead to something very, sometimes it's businesses, right, that grow really well and that get incubated and like all of that, right, that become like businesses in their own right. And sometimes they don't go anywhere at that moment, but there's a seed of something. And for me, it was really very much that. There was such good reception of the work that we were doing. We ran a pilot program and had our tools being used by real people in their day-to-day life with a lot of really positive feedback. It was so eye-opening, and I still remember some of the things, and they've stuck with me, and I've lost some weight, and I'm like, so it's like there's something very profound, I think. It's almost like whisper in someone's ear, something that they might already know, but they need that little nudge.
So this was a program where you were focusing on health changes through behavioral input or suggestions.
Like very personalized coaching, essentially.
Personalized coaching. When was this?
This was just before the pandemic, actually. So 2019 to 2021, something like that.
Because that's one-on-one seems like where it's going for everyone. I guess more and more people are also more concerned about how does this impact me? When it comes down to it, we don't really care about the general side effect. We care about the potential side effects for us or your parent or your child. And so really understanding how these programs interacts with that individual must be a huge business in the future.
Yeah, there's lots of people doing that really well. And in that particular instance, we were looking a lot at people trying to lose weight. That's the primary goal of most people who want to shift their nutrition, especially here in the US. There's a lot of companies out there that are doing a really good job at that. I think what was really interesting to me, I've always been obsessed with good food, and I'm super lucky that like my grandmother would take me to the market with her. My mom would take me to the farmer's market with her. I was born in Versailles, so near Paris, and I grew up near there. So in the west of Paris.
I needed to envision you with your grandmother picking out the groceries at the market.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And I would spend my summer on the Atlantic coast, like a lot of kids, you go to Brittany or Normandy or like the Atlantic coast. And so I spent my summers eating fish that had been fished that very morning, things like that. So it was definitely like incredibly formative, and it's so part of my DNA. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because actually, so when we were working on that project. What was so interesting is that because we were giving people all these tools and recommendations around adding more leafy greens and walking more and doing all this, as a team, we actually started bringing all of that in our day-to-day. For instance, we were catering lunch for a while, so before COVID and everyone got stuck at home. But before then, we were together 10 hours a day. And so we would cater lunch, and we, you know, we started getting more and more salad and less sandwiches, and we would always have a after lunch walk, and we had a little stretching here and there. Like, we added all these little kind of mini routines in our office. And it's really funny because people would come to us and they're like, oh, you're that team. You guys are like the healthy team. Yeah. And it's so interesting because it's not like we were doing it for ourselves. We were doing it for other people, right? But because we were talking about that all day, obviously you're like, oh, am I going to go and eat fried chicken today? It's probably not.
Maybe you got the biggest transformation of everyone.
Yeah, we were living it. We were walking the walk for sure. And I learned a lot there, right? We were working with physicians and nutritionists and coaches and sports medicine people. Of course I learned, right? And yeah, I think some of us have this incredible, I think, opportunity of what we learn in our work, we also can apply in our life, which is really pretty exciting, I think.
I think so too. Sometimes when these programs are very efficient, I wonder what makes it efficient versus not. For some people, it can be such a long way to implement these changes because it's so different from the way they live now or have been living. And then for others, it might be a shorter way, even if you haven't been living healthy for a long time, but still have some ways to connect it.
It's almost a language that you learn as a child, but you forgot because you don't live in that country anymore. And then, but somehow you can still make those sounds or pick up those words and you can learn that language again, like much faster. That's what comes up for me as an analogy.
And I was just thinking, like, everyone has experiences earlier that you can build on. And identifying those like entry points.
Anchors,
yeah, that we could build on. And so it's bridging that change for that individual rather than having these general, I guess, approaches where we just give everyone the same. Everyone have some experiences that might be a bridge to the new, I guess. So you were now working with food. And that's interesting because all of these experiences going from the human rights and the political work and then the technology and also the animation and advertisement part. And in a way, now you're putting that together in this work for this company, working with these individualized programs where health, tech, and the system thinking is all in there. And you're where you are now, working with food habits. Really tapping into all of this kind of multi-level potential of humans. So I was just wondering if you could talk about like how you have brought everything together.
Like that transformation.
Transformation into biohacking that you have done.
And sure. Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to. Yeah, so this work I was doing at Intel was during the pandemic. And so it was also a very special time for all of us who lived through something very unique and in some ways traumatic and certainly like bigger than ourselves. Personally, I was also going through a really radical shift because 6 months before the pandemic hit, my now ex-husband and I decided to get separated. And our kids were early teens. So it was a lot of change at once. And it was like somebody had pulled the rug from under my feet and I just couldn't find my bearings for a while. I just didn't know really. I knew I wanted to change something in my work, but I still wasn't able to really identify what it was. And I felt like my relationship with my children was shifting because they were growing up and not an easy time. Necessarily when you're a teenager, and especially when you're a teenager during a pandemic and your parents divorce. So it was a really hard time for them. And for me, yeah, it was a really big reimagining of who I am, who I want to be, and what I want to do. And I was in this very privileged position that I could take a little bit of time to think about it and finally essentially look at what do I really want for me and what can I contribute and how do I go about even figuring that out. And I don't even remember how, but I got wind of this program called the Design Science Studio within the Buckminster Fuller Institute. I'd always been pretty fascinated with Buckminster Fuller and his thinking, and I didn't know it very well, but I was excited about the multidisciplinarity and the sort of Renaissance person that he was. So amongst architects, he's quite famous all over the world, but otherwise it's a pretty niche like set of people that have heard of him and his work. So the Design Science Studio is a program where they take 144 artists and designers through a curriculum over the course of a year to create something in relationship to regeneration. And the reason is, so Buckminster Fuller's view of how we should create our world is to serve 100% of life. So he was very living and working in the 60s and 70s, and in some ways that the, you know, you could say pre-sign, but I think just a lot of people were thinking that way at that time too. And I saw it and I was really excited about it. And at the same time, there again went my little voice of, can I really do this? I'm not really an artist. And I thought, what could I do that is related to regeneration and where I can bring all the different things that I like to do? And I had been in parallel thinking about the power of food and the way that the industrial agricultural system works today is really not tenable. I've been thinking about that side of things for a bit. And so I had to come up with a project to apply to that program. So I decided, I said, if I work with chefs and we create regenerative food as a cuisine to offer for dinner, then I can have a photographer take really nice pictures and that'll be my art. And I thought, okay, I know how to do that. I know how to bring people together. I know how to work with different creatives. And I think I can pull that off. Mm. And I learned about it a week before the applications were due. So I didn't have a lot of time to dilly-dally about that whole concept. And it was great because they were like, oh my God, it's so cool. We don't have anybody who's doing anything around food. And that sounds great. And in fact, we're very excited about this. And so it was a really wonderful experience for me because I got to be interacting more than 2-3 times a week with people that think very differently from me. So it wasn't people that like had MBAs or had worked in like in advertising or whatever. They were people that like would pick up a guitar and invent a song on the spot and just everyone would be like floored. Just like the creativity like springing out of them. It was just like totally inspiring and wonderful. They were giving themselves permission to create and it was contagious in a way.
Wow.
And yeah, so that's how it started. So I'd been thinking a lot about seaweed and the potential for seaweed as a source of food in the West that really we haven't been using as much, and the potential for seaweed to provide like incredible economic opportunities for people on the coasts, and examples like Greenwave and other ones, and the fact that the kelp forests in California have to be restored, and started being pretty obsessed with seaweed and all the ways that we can help capture carbon and grow faster than kind of trees because there's weeds.
Yeah.
How do we go from being a snack to being something that we eat more of like regularly, right? What is that whole path, right? For people to get, okay, so that's something that I could be interested in eating and that's something that will be good for me. And by the way, also good for the planet. I also really wanted to do something that was joyful and that was optimistic and that was providing a narrative that was just like giving energy instead of, you know, how a lot of what's being talked about in terms of the future is often dystopian. And there's all these movies about like Armageddon and things like that, which is very dramatic and sells well in Hollywood and things like that. I get that. But we need those alternative narratives to be able to project to much more like, yeah, just like different types of realities. Like cyberpunk is a good example of, in fact, the Design Science Studio, a number of people are like more inherited from that influence. And there's something, I think, with food that's so incredible because like the second you taste something that is like good or bad or whatever, like it's your senses that take over. Like suddenly you come back to your body and you're like very present, and either you're savoring or you're like not enjoying it, whatever, but you're having a strong physical and emotional reaction. And that's not something you can necessarily control, but it's something that's making you very present. And I think it's important because I think that's one of the reasons why eating can be so transformative, right? In a way, beyond the physiology and the biology, but also in the capacity to bridge us with the outside world. Literally, we're bringing the outside world.
You're actually getting the outside on the inside.
Exactly.
That's crazy. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
The physical outside world is suddenly inside.
Yeah. And you're transforming it. And it's transforming you. It's not something that a lot of us think about day to day when you're eating, right?
It's so much symbolism in food and also real experiences, not just symbols, but real experiences. Like you talked about earlier, food has also meant kind of community and sharing. And imagine how much it means and how it feels when someone invites you to eat with them. Mm-hmm. And if they invite you home for dinner that they cooked, there's like nothing like it. That gesture and all that effort that they put into it, their hands making it physically, and then you get to eat it and taste it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get nourished in many levels, right? It's incredibly intimate. Right. Even knowing what somebody prefers or is allergic to, or like how they're going to react to one thing or another, it's very intimate because it's only because they tell you. You could not know like how, like you can love this apple pie and the person next to you can be like, that's not my jam. It's just, you cannot know that until like they have to express that to you, but they're feeling something very real, which can be very different from what you're feeling, which I find that quite fascinating, actually.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why I got so excited about food and all the things around making people think about their food more, but really change the way that they eat. Because when you talk about food, you can talk about everything. You talk about biology, you talk about health, you talk about prevention of conditions, you talk about community, you talk about, of course, the economy, you talk about spirituality. Everything is related. It's like an endless well of discovery and interconnections and layers. It's quite, hope you can see the sparkle in my eyes because
I love it. It is so funny because when you talk about it like that, I think a lot of the time, at least I do, I eat the food and of course I feel it, but you know how you, in a hectic life, you eat something for and you think it's for nutrition, like I just need to get something, have some food and something to drink and then move on and do the next thing. But when you talk about it and you mention creating an alternative narrative, make people understand all these levels of impact from this one source, you're also selling hope and agency.
Yeah, I hope so. And again, this is in a way a little bit of a selfish thing, but it also came to me because I've been thinking about what are some of the things I can do and what can't I do. As I was getting like more and more anxious about climate change and essentially going through a very intense grieving period of my prior life, of what life I had imagined for my children, of the way I had imagined the world to go. Like I also had to figure out like in my day-to-day, what can I do? And if I'm really interested in food and changing the food system, I know zero about being a farmer. I'm not going to go out and buy a farm and become a farmer. I just don't know how to do that. I don't have any of those skills, to be real. Right? Some people do that. There are a few people who've done that. There's some wonderful movies that talk about that, but I just don't see myself doing that. That's not me. So around the time that I was working for Intel and at the end of the project, I started thinking about what do I want to do next? And I started looking at regenerative agriculture and looking at how farmers can get financing to transition their farms from either traditional or organic even to regenerative. And I started doing all this research work, and I was telling you earlier about the work I'd done around child soldiers. I've done that in many different fields over the course of my career. Okay, I don't know anything about this field. Who are the players? What is happening? Where is this going? And I started looking at that and I was like, I need to work in that. And I studied economics and political science, but I was never good at finance. That's not me. I'm not a finance person. And I started being so overwhelmed about all the different ways that farmers have access or don't have access, or like, it's super complicated. And I was like, I have zero business like doing this. I'm a farmer. I don't know. I'm not a banker. I don't know how to do this. This is not me. But you know what? I eat every day. I make these choices. Alice Waters said eating is a very political act. I think that's true. Like the choices you make really impact not only your health, but also the people you support, right? The types of organizations you support and the type of farming you support, the type of all of that. And so, yeah, the agency piece, I think, is critical because, again, like a lot of us don't have that luxury of changing all of the ways that we live, right? But if you think about what's going to be necessary, we talk about things at a very global level or like at a national level, we have to shift our energy and whatever. So sure, and things have to shift at a institutional level and at those kinds of levels, but things have to shift at individual levels too. And that I know more about. That I felt like, okay, I've been studying like habit forming and habit change for a long time, things around food and nutrition and health. And I was like, okay, there I have something maybe that I can bring to people.
And you're contributing to transforming all of this, but you have been transforming so many times. Several times now you talked about something happens that you need to figure something out, like what's the next step for me? And then instead of being scared, you're curious. Of course, you're probably scared as well, but you're curious and brave enough to really try out and try to figure out how to apply whatever you have and figure out what you want to apply it to. That kind of curiosity for figuring that out and bravery is it's very on an individual level. But then you have found this a way to do this individual transformation by actually contributing to transformation on a much larger systemic level. So in a way, by transforming you, you're contributing to transforming the bigger picture for all of us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for acknowledging. I never really thought about the courage, to be honest, because I just didn't feel like I had a choice. I just felt like I had to figure it out. I just couldn't stop. And the curiosity, I think in some ways, it's certainly insatiable. And sometimes it's to a point where I would like it to be like feeling satiated once in a while. But yeah, but you know what it makes me think of? Not that I want to compare myself to her because she's like a total icon for me, but I recently heard an interview of Cristina Figueres, the woman who was in charge of the Paris Accords for the UN, and how she actually was going through a terrible divorce at the time that she was trying to bring 80 plus countries to agree to creating this unprecedented agreement.
Wow.
Yeah. And so her telling the story of internal transformation and how much she had to do that work in parallel to the work that she was doing for the greater good was just so intertwined. One couldn't work without the other. And it was so reflective for me of the analogy of the food, right? The small act of eating something different today, like of buying, and this is, I understand, very extreme, not everyone can do that, but going to buy seaweed from a local producer has an impact that like transcends the fact that you're going to have that. And it's the same thing with the other way, the other side of the spectrum. So it's also realizing, you were talking about earlier about how sometimes we just like quickly have a bite and move on to the next thing. Everyone does that. I do that all the time. Let's be real. That's reality. But there is something I think very profound in terms of your sense of agency, like you said, but in some ways responsibilities, but in some ways also like impact of these small day-to-day actions that almost work like compounding interest for you and your health, but for everyone around you. Also, it is contagious, right? So you invite somebody over for dinner and you have them try something that they'd never tried before. And now they're curious and now they might want to show it to their kids or their other friends or their parents. And we're social beings. And I think this is, it's something that we should like not lose track of.
I love that. Oh, yes. Providing those experiences and having the time to experience it. And then people would want to share that with others again. Sharing with some people will enable more sharing. There's so many levels. And you're talking about seaweeds, like that one thing. When you talk about it the way you do, you're convincing me. We could probably talk about any food resource in nature, right? There are ways to enjoy it, ways to make sure that it has a positive impact, the way we harvest it, the way we grow it, and the way we decide to make a business out of it, and kind of where the money goes and where it comes from, and all of that systematic and coordination on so many levels, just for that one thing. It gives me tremendous hope.
Good. I'm so glad.
Yeah. Mind-blowing.
I'm excited. Yeah. If you haven't read it, I recommend Braiding Sweetgrass. I'll send it to you if you
yes.
want.
Love that. While we were talking now, I wrote down three words, kind of keywords to describe you. First of all, courage. I think courageous, and not just by being a woman who has had to figure out ways to reinvent yourself because life changes and new opportunities come and they go, but really courage to try out things that you haven't tried before, and then using what you have to generate new things. And then curiosity. I think it's fantastic that when you experience stuff that people might get scared of, going out of your comfort zone, some people might consider that not a good choice, but you're so curious. And those two things, the courage and the curiosity, has really allowed you to be extremely creative. And it's so interesting that you said you didn't think about yourself as an artist in a way, but you wanted to tap into that. But the courage and the curiosity and the interest in all of the aspects and levels of things really makes you creative, because you can't stop it.
I think I just didn't know. Today, I can call myself a designer. I can call myself a creator. An artist, I still have a little trouble, because I always think of like a fine artist. Mm-hmm. But what's so interesting is that being an artist just means you're making art. You're just making. And it's the same thing of the whole like giving yourself permission for trying something, or for being your full self, or for daring. Mm-hmm. That you're not born an artist, or you're not born a physician or an architect. You become one, right? First, you're not going to be good because you just don't know. But we have this, I think, collectively, a lot of that preconceived notions of either you're a talented artist or you're not. In fact, I see that in my children who have been artists their whole lives, but it's spending hours and hours. And it's not like it just happens. It's the process, and it's the creation for the sake of the creation, like the journey rather than the destination.
You talked about giving yourself permission, and now you're giving yourself permission to really take up that space to figure things out, and mm-hmm. allowing you to have that freedom of putting all the pieces together.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So today, Delicious Future, we have a really clear sense of purpose and mission, and we have multiple ways that we believe that we can have impact. One of them is around research, establishing what regenerative eating means and giving a like substantial foundation to that way of being and thinking about your food. So we've done some work with UC Berkeley last semester, and there's a few other organizations we're going to be partnering with this year. The second big pillar of the work that we do is still around like events and dinners and joyful gatherings to really celebrate a positive future of food that can be something that we all like get excited about, and like bringing that energy out into the world, right? Different types of exploratory and culinary experiences, where I work with chefs and we come up with menus that will be telling a story of either a specific place or a specific type of food. And I think what's different from what we do that differs from other like culinary experiences is that we're always very keen on the research and data driven. And so we always start with the senses. We always want to start with seducing you with that like special, it's beautiful and it's exciting and it's new and it's all of that. But also we want to be able to have at our fingertips the key reasons why we chose the foods that we chose, both from a nutritional standpoint, but also from what's called the ecosystem services standpoint. So what are all the ways that the way that this thing was grown has mm-hmm. benefited, like soil health or reduction of erosion or the symbiosis with other organisms or biodiversity, things like that. So we always want to have that same way that you have at the back of food packaging, the nutritional facts. Like, we're looking to have as much as possible, like the understanding of, yeah, the different sort of the layers. So that's the second piece, which is really about the creative and the artistic side of things. And that's also the more, mm-hmm. I guess, more sexy and more appealing. Mm-hmm. The third piece is we're developing a behavior change program to help those who are already like interested and excited about adopting some of these new or renewed ways of eating into their day-to-day. Because you were talking earlier about how there's a difference between how everybody interprets. So it's one thing to have like broad guidelines or general like principles, but like what EMAC needs mm-hmm. on Tuesday at lunch needs to be much more specific than that. And it might be different from what I need, right? Yeah. That's what we're working on, is like highly personalizing, essentially a coaching program to help those who are interested in shifting their ways of eating.
So the knowledge piece, where you look into data-driven research, collaborate with academia and look into the ecological aspect of it and nutritional part, really understanding what the food is and can do. And then the existential part, or the experiential kind of senses and narratives and the contextualization of it and the experience of it. And finally, bringing it all together, really making individual positive change that's really perfectly curated for a person's needs.
Yeah, thank you. It sounds like you might be interested in being part of our pilot. So let me know.
I love it. I love the fact that this is you. Like, you talked about all these treads in your life, and then you're bringing all of it into this one big all-encompassing project that is super targeted and specific and clear. And it should be messy because it's all of these things, but it's really not. It really is so specific and it's so impactful. Wow, I'm so impressed.
Thank you so much. We'll talk again in a few years and see how much impact we've had. I'm taking this slow, like one step at a time. What I'm really excited about actually is to bring these kinds of programs into organizations also to help shift individuals in their day-to-day at work and at home in a way that's like, I think, again, shifting people in communities or in collectives, I think is really interesting. While you maintain a sense of, not just a sense, but you maintain personalization. So the sense of being personalized, but also the reality of it with multiple kinds of data inputs you can use. But really, yeah, I think our goal is more than shifting a few individuals who are already convinced. I really want to change the way that a million people eat by 2030. So we'll see.
That's really amazing and an awesome goal. Okay, so 2030. So you have a 5-10 year plan, or where do you want to take this in the next 5-10 years, do you think?
Yeah, I think we are developing the plan. It's, people joke about like building the race car as you're driving it on the freeway when you talk about a startup. So ours is not like a tech startup, but it's certainly a similar sense of we're very iterative and pragmatic in the way that we go about things. We try things and see what works. So we do a lot of experimentation. And what I like about the flexibility in these different domains that I described is that I think that year after year, we can, like, we had a lot of focus and on the research last year because we needed to have that foundation before we can really get to other pieces. But I feel like it's going to be like shifting almost like an accordion, like different pieces will take more space, right? And be filled more of the work. But yeah, I am in this very different place than I was a few years ago, where I'm now able to really have a lot of clarity and be much more proactive about how to apply, to your point, like all these skills I've developed, these experiences I've acquired, and trying to bring them all together while maintaining a lot of the curiosity, because I don't think you can move along without that. So hopefully, yes, that's where we're going. And I'm hoping that a lot of people get as inspired as you are today.
I would love to be part of that pilot. It sounds awesome. All of those different pillars, they're a nice part of a holistic framework at the same time as they really stand on their own feet as interesting areas to study, to be creative, and to really implement.
Yeah, I think it's really important because the people that work with me are all very different. And so the person that's working with me on the research side, I want her to feel completely empowered in terms of that work. And then the chefs we work with, like they have their own complete playground. I want to be involved in everything because I'm so passionate about it. But I also really, I'm hoping to build an organization where we all are collaborators who are bringing our own like talent. The ownership piece is really important to me. The like making this your own and making this as good a reflection of who you are and your potential. Yeah. So it's really important, that we build that way. And so, yes, certainly, like, all these areas could be, like, I feel like sometimes they could be, like, different organizations. But without one without the other is not nearly as exciting, I think.
And you get to do all of it. So we're running out of time. There's so many questions I would like to ask you. Can I sneak in, like, a final question? You're a mother and you are also definitely a person who has a very self-made professional life that is really curated for your particular skill sets, knowledge, and path where you're bringing it all together. It's so much work to do, right? On the other side, there's also life and children and family and all of that. I was wondering, what is most meaningful for you about life? What is most important to you in life?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's inspiring change to make things better. And with that, there's an expression I've used before, which is shining my light. There's something about, I don't have all the answers, I don't pretend to, but I think that there is something that people have been seeking after, which is like, sort of an inspiration. A way, I guess, that I've been making them feel that they're seeking my company. And I've been, and I like that, to see that in people of all kinds. And I'll give you an example. Like this morning, as I was leaving my house, my 3-year-old neighbor, who's a wonderful little human, jumped in my arms to say hello and ask if she'd come and hang out with me and my cats. And that's, to me, that was a wonderful gift. And that's the kind of things that I'm looking for to be for people of all kinds. And especially, I think what's wonderful with children is that obviously it's not a transaction. They're not looking for something other than like a good time. And the energy, they know how to sense that. And if anything else, if I can spend the rest of my life cultivating that energy around me, I will, first of all, I think, give homage to my grandmother, who was very much someone like that, who people wanted to have around and just gave people strength and energy. But I think in some ways, that's why I'm here.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's so beautiful. I love that. Perfect final words. Thank you so much.
Thank you for this conversation. Yes, really honored to meet you and have you asked me all these questions. You're helping me out a lot. So
it's really inspiring, and you gave me so much to think about, really.
So please think of me tomorrow morning at breakfast. And then
I will. I'm sure I will now eat with a completely different mindset. And it's just very inspiring to think about all the opportunities that are out there. And by being so present, I guess you see those opportunities.
I started this podcast journey with a mission to get a more in-depth look into the new opportunities this age of technology offers, and to understand better some of the explored and unexplored paths people and companies are taking these days. My initial focus was on learning more about the technology side of things. However, the conversations have been a revelation, showcasing the intelligence, reasoning, problem-solving, and creativity of the people behind the tech. And more importantly, I've been inspired by how the combination of deep subject matter knowledge and human-centered purposes can be effectively implemented in the real world by the use of new technology. In Raphael's case, her interest in the potential of systemic and human-centered design and approaches for behavioral change has given rise to her new work on regenerative eating and community building. So perhaps tapping into our unique blend of skill sets and purposes will naturally translate into the meaning and impact so many of us wish for. Thank you for listening to the Chameleons Podcast. I'm your host, Imak Zambrana.